It's a real pleasure to be back with everyone, and as we all know, we just commemorated Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, which means that we are now in the midst of the 3 weeks, which is the period of Avelos on the Churban Beis Hamikdash. And what is most prominently lacking without a Beis Hamikdash is the clear, the transparent, and the open relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we don't have the perspective that we once had when we lived in Eretz Yisrael, when we had a Beis Hamikdash. The Galus experience, as the Psukim describe, are referred to as Haster Aster Panay, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu in some way limits himself, where he hides his face, and we have a limited understanding and appreciation of what it means to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I know that this year is generally supposed to focus on Pirkei Avos, but I really wanted to just take this morning to talk about issues of Emunah and to think a little bit about it. The reason why I think it's important is because, as I mentioned, during the 3 weeks, it's always a critical time for us to consider issues of Emunah, to understand what it is that we're lacking. Number two, I find that every summer when I'm in Camp Simcha and I have the opportunity to interact with many, many wonderful young women who are battling very serious illnesses, it's an opportunity for me to be confronted with many very serious issues of Emunah. And I have a chance to think about it again. I have a chance to consider what it means for all of us and to clarify in my own mind a little bit what it is that we believe in and why it is that we believe in this. I mentioned on Shabbos, and I think it's worth mentioning again, one of the most terrifying experiences for me when I'm in camp, and there are a lot of very intense moments there, many very serious shilohs, many very important issues that come up, but one of the most fearful experiences for me is when I'm asked every summer to do a question and answer session for the oldest division of the girls who are on the campus. And I really don't want to do it. I never want to do it. I do it only because they want it. But the reason why I'm afraid is because I know exactly what all of them are going to ask. You always get a few questions that are pretty mild, that are pretty simple, that are pretty nice, and they throw me a few softballs, but then they really start opening up and they start asking, how do you know there's a God? I don't believe in God anymore. I can't daven because of what I've been through and what I'm continuing to live through. How can it be that God punishes righteous people? I've never done anything in the world to deserve this. You can have young kids who are really struggling a lot in their lives. And all these kinds of very, very easy questions, as you can imagine. So somehow I muddle my way through it, and I try to do whatever I can to make a meaningful conversation. But more than that, it's really just listening to many of their stories and having the opportunity to just validate what it is that they're living through. But I was astounded this summer. I got a response that I've never gotten before. I've done this 6 times already. This is my 6th summer being in Camp Simcha. I have had this discussion very openly, very candidly with many, many of the campers over the years. But this summer, I had a question and an inquiry that I never heard before, and I was absolutely shocked. After we were finished this discussion, there were 2 young Hasidisha girls who came over to me, probably 16 or 17 years old, and they said that both of them are in remission for almost 2 years. And they told me that they have something extremely personal, something that they've never shared with their families, never shared with their parents, something that they've never opened up about. But over the last 2 weeks of camp, they became very close with one another, and they started to share their innermost feelings with one another. And they said that they were shocked to learn that both of them shared the same experience, and now they were sharing the experience together, which was very surprising to them. So what was it? They said that they've been in remission for almost 2 years, and they mentioned that they both daven in Shmona Esrei every single day, the same tefillah. They both daven that they hope HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make them sick again. And I looked at them and I said, why would you offer such a tefillah? They said, you know, we felt so closely connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu while we were sick. It's a feeling that we miss. And it's something that we want again in our lives. I never had such an inquiry. I was astounded by this perspective. It's obviously not correct. We can talk about the details another time about why it's not right. The first thing I mentioned to them is we daven every morning, Al tivienu lidei nisayon. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu not to test us. So I asked them, if you come out of a test looking as beautiful as you are and feeling the way you feel, why do you ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day not to test you? We should all be tested. What's that tefillah all about? So that's what we spoke about, and it was a very rich and robust discussion, but it was so eye-opening to me. It was such an opportunity for me to realize there are people in the world who really feel connected, who really understand what emunah actually means in practicality. There are people who really live life understanding what it means to be in a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that when they don't have it, they feel they're really lacking. Rashi writes in the beginning of Sefer Eicha, Haisa ka'almana, Eicha yashva badad, it says that the city of Yerushalayim was alone, and it seems almost as if like it was an almana. Rashi says, lo almana mamish, it's not that the woman actually lost her husband, it's not that the spouse was gone, but just that he was lemer chakim, that he was very far away, and he went on a trip, and she's longing, she doesn't know when he's going to come back. When somebody loses a close relative, there's a sense of finality, as painful as that is, we know that at some point, they're going to come to terms with the reality. When a person feels that their beloved is around, they just don't know exactly where, but you know they're alive, you know they're somewhere, you just don't have a connection with them, that sometimes could be even more painful, because you don't exactly know where to put yourself. If you've been following the news, there's a family in Israel, I don't know exactly what the story is, but there's a family in Israel that had a child who's missing for 110 days already. You think about that experience and you understand in some way, again, you can't compare tragedies, but in some way when a person is longing for a relationship that you think is there, but you're not sure is there, you think they're alive, but you don't exactly know what it is, you don't know the whereabouts, you're worried, you wish you had it in your life, but you don't know if you're going to be able to have it in your life. It's something that is described in the beginning of Sefer Eicha as Haisa ka'almana, not that the beloved is deceased, but rather it's ka'almana, that it's as if the woman doesn't know exactly where her husband is. She knows he's around, but she just feels lost and bereft. And in some way, that's what I was very enlightened to by speaking with these girls, and I think it's an opportunity for all of us to learn from them. So, as I said, we're going to talk this morning about issues of emunah, which I think are always important to talk about, but certainly during the 3 weeks and the 9 days, during this period of the year, it's an opportunity for all of us to remind ourselves of how critically important these issues are and how fundamental they are to all of our lives. You know, we talk a lot as Jews about the experience of Geula. And certainly at this time of the year, we talk about Mashiach every day in our davening. We mention Mashiach more than many of the other tefillos. And it's something that seems to be so central of a focus as a Jew. As we know, it's what has kept Jews hopeful for so many generations. When they've been through many great tragedies, we know that they hold on to emunah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring them a Geula, that the Ribono Shel Olam will bring the redemption. However, what we may not be aware of is, the Gemara says in Masechet Sanhedrin, that on the cusp of the coming of Mashiach, there's going to be some very painful, very difficult ordeal that all of us are going to have to encounter. And that is referred to, as the Gemara, as Chevlei Mashiach. It's referred to as some very uncomfortable, very unusual experience that the Jewish people are going to have to live through before they come to Mashiach. So much so that the Gemara says a number of Amoraim said to one another, Yese v'lo achmine, I hope Mashiach will come. We daven every day, achakelo b'chol yom sheyavo. We know as Jews this is something that we yearn for, something that we aspire toward. But he said to his friend, Yese v'lo achmine, I guess in Hebrew you would translate it as, Yavo ha-Mashiach v'lo erenu. I hope Mashiach will come, but I hope I won't be around to experience it. Because I don't want to have to go through the introduction to the coming of Mashiach. I don't want to have to live through the Chevlei Mashiach, which is going to be so profoundly difficult and powerful. And the Amora says, I just don't want to be a part of that. So I hope Mashiach will come for the Jewish people. I hope they get to that time, but I'm not sure that I want to be a part of that experience. And that maybe gives us a very different perspective. There were those who said that maybe the Shoah, maybe the Holocaust was that experience. I don't know, and it's hard to know. But what I do know is the Noam Elimelech writes something very beautiful, very fascinating. And he explains to us as follows. Where does this idea come from, where it's referred to as Chevlei Mashiach? It's referred to as such because we know when a woman is in labor, which is, I don't know, but I would venture to say it's quite painful. So we would refer to it as Chevlei Leida. That's the way that we refer to it generally. Chevlei Leida means when a person is in the depths of their pain because of the physical experience that they're going through, it's referred to as Chevlei Leida. And the Navi Yeshaya borrows that term, and he refers to this as Chevlei Mashiach, that we're going to be living through that kind of very painful, very agitating experience. But ask the Noam Elimelech, why do we refer to this as chevle? There are many different ways that we can refer to a painful experience. Many different ways that we can describe something that is uncomfortable. Why, in particular, is it referred to as chevle Mashiach? Explains the Noam Elimelech, the reason why is because in Hebrew, a chevel is a cord, it's a rope. It's something that's suspended. It's a cable. And explains the Noam Elimelech, there are many different things that we can be challenged by as a people. But what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us from the outset is, the challenge at the end of days before the coming of Mashiach is going to be, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have that cable dangling from heaven, and he's going to see, as he rattles it, how many people are able to actually hold on for dear life. That's what the Chevle Mashiach is going to be. And as you think about the experiences of our world over the last couple of years, and you ask yourself, is this not Chevle Mashiach? Is this not exactly what is described in the Noam Elimelech, that so many different circumstances have come up where people have really been rattled, where people have really been shaken from that cord that connects us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they've surrendered, and they've abandoned, and they've given up. For good reason, some of them. It's difficult. It's hard to hold on. We've been through so much. And perhaps the Tzav HaShaa, perhaps the message for all of us and the challenge for all of us is, do we have the ability to solidify, to cement, to secure that relationship, that commitment, that loyalty that we're supposed to have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the engagement that we have with Him at all times? So that is, just by way of introduction, what we're going to be talking about. In Sefer Dvarim, we know that in Parshas Dvarim we read the Haftorah, Shabbos Chazon, from the Nabi Yeshaya. And the Nabi Yeshaya gives some kind of rebuke where he says, Yada Shar Koneu. He makes a contrast between an animal and a human being. And he says, Yada Shar Koneu. An animal almost instinctively knows who its owner is. The animal knows to follow the leader. V'chamor Avus Ba'alav. And when you have a donkey, it also knows how to follow exactly where the leader is leading it. But Yisrael lo yada ami lo hisbanon. So Rabbi Yelapian explains that perhaps what it means is this contrast is an animal even knows instinctively where to go, who to follow. And somehow the Jewish people, writes the Navi Yeshaya, don't instinctively have that feeling, don't have that understanding of which way to go. It's a complicated world. And for some reason we don't exactly know how to follow the leader. We don't know how to identify the leader. We don't know how to find the leader at all. And that really is so much of the complication of what it is that we live through. Why is it that it's so hard and so difficult for us? So something I often think about is, Rav Soloveitchik had a very beautiful drasha that he gave, where he said, we say in Tehillim, Ani amarti bechavzi, kal ha'adam kozev. We talk about our relationship with our HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our relationship with the world, and we say, we look around, and everyone that we interact with, everyone that we engage with is, kozev means dishonest. Everyone is a liar. I don't know about you. I don't live life that way. I don't live life believing that everyone I interact with is just not telling me the truth. It's a very tough life to live, if that's the perspective you have. Now, some have argued, yeah, that maybe should be our perspective, because you see how many criminals there are in the world. But I don't know, I don't like to believe that everyone is so evil. I don't like to be so down on everybody. I think most people in the world are probably wonderful. Most people are great. And every so often you have somebody who's not. And that's a very unfortunate reality. So what does it mean when David HaMelech describes humanity as being kal ha'adam kozev? Every human being is a liar. Everyone is dishonest. How can we have a functioning society? What exactly does it mean? So Rav Soloveitchik explained what it means is as follows. When Adam HaRishon was created, we're told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created him, afar min ha'adamah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created him from the dust of the earth. Now we know, for those who study Chumash, whenever there's a hey at the beginning of the word, usually it's pointing out that there's something unique and special about what's being described. So what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created afar min ha'adamah? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man from the dust of the earth, the Adama. What's the Adama? What's so special about this ground? Obviously, the end product was special. That Adam HaRishon and Chava, they came out from that product. But what does it mean that they were created from the Adama with a hay in the beginning? So the Medrash has two interpretations. Number one, it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Tzavar Afaro Mikal HaAdama. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took a little bit of dirt from the entire cosmos, from the entire world, and he put that all together and he created Adam HaRishon. So what it means, Ha'adama, it means the entire earth, the whole globe. The second interpretation of the Medrash is, perhaps what it means is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took it mimakom shenemar mizbach adama tasali. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took it from the most sacred, the most consecrated, the most elevated ground in the world, which is the Makom HaMikdash. He took some of that earth, and from that, he created Adam HaRishon. Explained to Rav Soloveitchik, we are all created through this contradictory set of values that are inside of all of us. He suggested that both opinions of the Medrash are correct. Both are accurate. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us as being cosmic human beings, as being people who have a universal interest, people who are curious. Why is it that we read the news about what's going on in Sri Lanka? Have you ever been there? Do you know anybody there? What do you care? I hope you care. You should care. But why do you care? Why do you care that a prime minister, a former prime minister, was murdered in Japan? Does it matter to your life? The answer is it should matter to your life, because if terrible things are happening, it should matter to you. But why? I have no plans anytime in the future to travel to Japan. Their laws make absolutely no difference to my life at all. I actually don't know anybody that lives in Japan. So why should I care? The answer is because all of us were created with a certain sense of curiosity. All of us were created with a certain sense of that Adama from Kol Ruchos HaAdama, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us with cosmic interests. Why is it that people get involved in scientific studies that can take years and years to figure out, where they take research from the entire world because they have an interest in the entire world? And even if this is an illness that may not really plague my community, even if this is something that's only found in some jungle in Africa, but still, it's of interest to me as a scientist. Because that's the way all of us were created, that we have interests that are way beyond ourselves, that are way outside of our own small purview. At the same time, we were all created afar min ha'adama. We were all created from the earth, which was the holiest earth, the holiest ground, which was from the Makom HaMikdash, from the Mizbeach. And as a result of that, we have these conflicting values that push at us and pull at us at all times. On the one hand, we all feel intrinsically connected, deeply moved by the opportunity to be related to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Makom HaMikdash is a focal point of our lives, but at the same time, we're pulled in other directions, seeing so many different things. I was just in Eretz Yisrael for a couple of days last week, 3.5 days. It was an amazing opportunity. And Yonina, what you and your team put together, and I'll call out Stephanie as well, she's not here, but tell her, what the women of our community have done to inspire the TJJ for Moms trip was absolutely phenomenal. And I was so blessed to have a small part in just experiencing it with you and being on the plane back home with a number of you. It was just so, so phenomenal to experience it. For those who may not be aware, there were over 50 women, unaffiliated women, from different communities in Long Island, Merrick, different places, not too far away from us, that were taken on a trip, on a 10-day trip to Eretz Yisrael, where they were just given an experience to see what Eretz Yisrael is, and to experience what beautiful, wonderful Jewish life is all about. And they were led by a number of volunteers from our shul, who took off time to spend the time with them. And it's not just the 10 days that they spent with them in Eretz Yisrael, it's all the months and months of preparation in advance, and the Shabbos that they put together here, and the challah bake that they had here, and the shir that they put together in Merrick, and all the different programs that they had leading up to this. Obviously, the crescendo was to be together in Eretz Yisrael and to experience that. It was so uplifting. It was so amazing. So last week, I had an opportunity to be with you and to be with a number of the OU's programs in Israel that are spending their summers there. And I was so inspired. I had an opportunity to talk to, I don't know, I guess over 1,000 kids in less than 3 days. And it was very, very special, very uplifting. But one of the things that really took me was, there's a program that's run called Yad B'Yad. If you don't know what it is, it's also very inspiring. It's a beautiful program run by Yachad, where they have some of the participants who are there are of special needs, and others are not. And they all spend the summer together. I think it was almost 100 kids together. And all of them do the same activities. and all of them are treated equally, and all of them are given equal attention, and all of them end up becoming very, very friendly, and they mold relationships, and they break down barriers, and it was so beautiful to spend time with them and to see what it is that they're accomplishing for both for the special needs children who are there, and for those who are not, the enriching experience that it gives them to be more understanding, to be more compassionate, to be more patient, was something that really was very uplifting. And I think that if you have a child who is, actually you do have a child who's running the program, and you should be so proud, but I think there are many, many of the parents in our community who have children who are running and infusing these programs with Ruach and taking responsibility and understanding how much they can enrich the lives of others. You should be so proud as parents for what you have created and for the children making these decisions to be a part of these programs. So I interacted with many of the kids, and one young woman on Yad B'Yad came over to me, and she was crying hysterically, and she couldn't calm herself down, and she kept coming over to me. She wanted to talk. I said, "What's the problem?" She just couldn't collect her thoughts. And I was with them on a few of the different stops, and at one point she said, "Okay, now I'm ready to talk." I said, "What's the problem?" She said, "You know, leading up to this trip in Israel," this is a girl in high school, "leading up to this trip in Israel," she said, "my counselors have told me, and the program directors told me, that I'm going to feel connected, that I'm going to feel God everywhere I go. And here we are a week into the program, and I seem to be the only one who doesn't feel it." And she said, "I'm very nervous, because we're scheduled to go to the Kotel tomorrow to be in the Old City. And what happens if I don't even feel him then? What do I do?" And it was so sweet. It was so sincere. It was a beautiful conversation to have. And I had to talk to her how different people connect in different ways, and different people feel things at different times and different opportunities and experiences. Not everybody feels the same way. And yes, it's possible you'll go to the Old City and you still won't feel a connection and you won't be overwhelmed, and that's okay. But it was amazing to see someone who's struggling to try to feel connected, to want to have that connection, to want to have that sense of understanding. And that really is, like Rav Soloveitchik says, what's at the core of all of us. It's Mizbach Adama, that somewhere deep inside of us, we have that pull, we have that sensational feeling that we want to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I was with the TJJ group, and let me just clarify, they posted a lot of pictures on Instagram that were sent to me. So they posted pictures of me on Instagram together with the TJJ group at Yad Vashem, which was a very meaningful experience. The very next picture they posted was all of these women having a wonderful day at Yam HaMelech. I was not there, let me just clarify. Those pictures maybe should not have been posted, I'm not sure. But I was not there with them. I joined them at Yad Vashem, I joined them in the Old City, I joined them a few other places and on the plane, but I was not there when they were having a wonderful time as women on a separate beach having a great time. Let me just clarify for all those who weren't exactly sure. But what I found extremely meaningful, you know, when we were together in the airport coming home, I don't know if anyone wants to hear about any of this. I'm talking to a few people in the room. But when we were together in the airport coming home, and I just saw that they just couldn't hold themselves back from crying, from being so emotional about the experience of what it is that they gained and the connection that they felt. And they don't even know how to put it into words. They don't even know how to explain or describe what it is that they're feeling. But there's something that's being felt. There's a intrinsic connection that a Jew feels to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it's the way that all of us were created. It's the way the Ribbono Shel Olam made us from the outset, that we're supposed to feel some kind of connection. And sometimes we tap into it, other times we don't. So the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, Daf Lamed Aleph, I see it's already 10 o'clock, maybe we won't get through everything, but we'll see. The Gemara says, B'shal Shemachnisim Adam Ladin. The Gemara says, La'achar Me'ev Esrim Shana, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have an intimate conversation with each of us. And there are going to be a short list of questions that all of us will be asked. Number one, says the Gemara, the very first question on the list is, Nasata v'nasata be'emuna, which all the Mefarshim explain means, did you conduct your business affairs with honesty? Were you a virtuous person? There was someone I was with in Israel last week as well. I don't know if he wants his name to be mentioned, so I won't mention it, but I was so inspired. This is a person who lives in Teaneck or Bergenfield. I met him for the first time. He's a board member of the OU. And he told me that, I didn't just give it away, there were like 500 board members of the OU in Israel last week. There was a big get-together there. So I got to meet him. We were talking for a while. We were in the car together for quite some time. And he told me the following story. He showed me an unbelievable email. And he said, I'm sharing it with you because I know you're here together with some of the programs. I know you're spending time with Yachad. I also know you just came home from Camp Simcha. I said, yeah, what does that have to do with anything? So he tells me the following. His family had booked tickets to go away, I think, for Sukkot or something. And he booked it all on miles because he's a businessman. He has a lot of miles because of different business things that he does. So he booked it all on miles. And whatever it was that came up, they had to cancel all the tickets. Now, when you book on miles, they refund your miles if you don't end up using them. So he sent them an email, or he called them up, and he said, I'd like a refund because we're not going to be able to make the trip that all of us were planning, and he wanted to cancel all the tickets. It was 140,000 miles that had to go back on his account. The airline, I forgot which one it was, mistakenly refunded him $140,000 instead of 140,000 points. So he showed me the email that he wrote to the managers in the airline, and I was extremely inspired. He wrote to them, I'm an Orthodox Jew, and I live in New Jersey. He said where he lives. He said, I'm part of an Orthodox community, and I would never take advantage of an honest mistake that you made. Obviously, I'm not deserving of $140,000. I was supposed to be refunded 140,000 points. And he started telling me, yes, we know Tos, Akum is Mutter, and maybe it's allowed, but he said, I'm not keeping the money. Everybody can use an extra $140,000. It's very nice. But how can I keep the money? Some secretary somewhere made a little mistake that ended up probably costing them their job and is going to end up making the company lose, and I'm going to steal that money? I'm not prepared to do it. So he sent a beautiful email and he said, I don't expect you to honor the money and allow me to keep it, nor would I keep it. But he said, I have two causes that are very close to my heart. He said, there are two camps that I'm involved with that take care of Jewish children who have special needs. Number one is Yad B'Yad, he said, Yachad. And number two, he said, is Camp Simcha. I would like to suggest that you give $70,000 to Camp Simcha and $70,000 to Yachad, and I too will make major contributions in your honor if you do so. I was so taken by that. And what I told him was, the Gemara here writes, I know, I didn't give the end of the story. This was last week, Wednesday. He left Thursday morning. I didn't have a chance to follow up with him. Maybe next week he'll tell me. But the first question that all of us will be asked is, Nasata v'nasata be'emuna. Did you live all of life understanding that there's a higher ground that you're supposed to be living by? That there's a certain sense of integrity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of all of us? That's question number one. Number two, the Gemara asks, Kavata itim la Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ask us not, did you learn Torah? But Kavata itim la Torah means, did you set aside time every single day that Torah needs to be the focus of your life? I think in our community, we make it so easy. You talk to communities where they don't have the opportunities that we have, and you see, it's so easy here. There are shiurim in the morning, shiurim at night, shiurim online. We have groups where you can get the shiurim here. Everything is made so easy. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ask all of us, Kavata itim la Torah. Not just did you study Torah when you had a chance, but did you set aside time every single day to make sure that it was clear to you, to your family, to all of your family members, that Torah is a priority in your life? That this is the most foundational aspect of your life? Number three, the question is, Asakta b'piria v'rivya. Notice, the question is not, did you have children? It's not within our control to have children. There are unfortunately many people who try to get married and are unable to do so. There are many people who get married, who try to conceive, and are unable to have children. So you can't blame me for not having children. I tried. The question here is, Asakta b'piria v'rivya. Did you attempt to bring children into the world? Which is fascinating that that's the third question on a very short list of questions that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will ask us. Number four, Tzipisa l'Yeshua. Anyway, a number of questions. So the Baal HaTanya points out that perhaps the first question, Nasata v'nasata be'emuna, does not just mean, did we engage with the world with virtue and with honesty, with integrity, but maybe it means something on top of that. And that is, did you immerse yourself, Nasata v'nasata be'emuna, did you involve yourself, did you engage in the whole parsha of emuna? Did you look into it in your life? Did you actually think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and what He means to you in your life? Or did you just take it as, okay, in kindergarten I learned that we're supposed to daven every day, and we're supposed to learn Chumash, that's what I learned in first grade, and I go to daven every day, and I go to shul on Shabbos, and I do all these kinds of things, and I keep Shabbos, but there's no actual relationship with God in any of that equation. Nasata v'nasata be'emuna, writes the Baal HaTanya, is, did we actually trouble ourselves to try to figure out and understand what emuna is all about, what our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is supposed to be all about? There's a fascinating discussion in the Gemara Maseches Makos. And I think if any of us would have been charged, would have been tasked with doing this, we would have had a difficult time doing so. The Gemara says, is there any way to compress, to consolidate all of what the Taryag Mitzvahs are? If I were to ask anyone in the room, what are the 613 Mitzvahs, I think we would all have trouble actually listing them. You would know some of the famous ones, but then you would probably get stuck somewhere along the way. I'm not sure how far in, but all of us would have trouble. So the Gemara says it's hard to keep track of 613 mitzvahs. Is there a way to make general categories, to figure out how we're going to boil it down to smaller categories that maybe will be easier to remember? And then, once you know those categories, you basically know everything. So the Gemara says that a number of different leaders of the Jewish people tried to consolidate. Moshe Rabbeinu boiled it down. David HaMelech said, you know, we're going to condense it a little further. Maybe people have greater ADD than they had in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. So 613 worked for them. We're going to make it into 11 categories, says the Gemara. David HaMelech boiled it down to 11. Yeshaya HaNavi came along and said, no, 11 is too much. People can't keep track of 11 different things, 11 different categories. We're going to boil it down to 6. Then the Gemara says, Micha HaNavi came along. He said, no, 6 is also too many for people to keep track of. We're going to boil it down to 3. And he consolidated everything to 3 general categories. In the end, the Gemara says, Chabakuk, one of the great Nevi'im, came along and he says, I can really boil all of Kol HaTorah Kula down to 1 thing. And what is that? V'tzadik be'emunaso yichyeh. You want to know what all of Yiddishkeit is about? You want to know what everything that we do is about? Yes, there are details about Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras HaMishpacha and many different things that we have to be aware of, but that's just details. You want to know what the essence of all of Torah actually is? V'tzadik be'emunaso yichyeh. It's somebody who lives life with emunah. If you have that, you have everything. If you don't have that, you really are left with nothing at all. And that's what the Gemara teaches us, that is the foundation of Kol HaTorah Kula. That's what all of Torah rests on. The Ramban explains, why is it that this is so important? The Ramban writes, and I'm going to read you his words, Im ein hayidia, lo yitachen shum davar me'avoda. If you don't know that there's a Ribono Shel Olam, if you don't have a connection with him, then why are you serving him? Why would you serve somebody that doesn't exist? Why would you do anything that doesn't have a higher purpose? What are you doing it for? And the Ramban explains, he gives a powerful comparison. The same way when you have a Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash who is supposed to be offering Karbanos on behalf of a functioning Beis HaMikdash, so the Mishnah says when he does so, he has to know, Limihu Maktir. He has to have in mind, what are we doing this for? He has to have in mind which individual came and confronted him and asked him to offer the Karban. He also has to have in mind where the Karban is being brought to, who he's doing it for. If you don't have those two elements in mind, the whole Karban is meaningless. There's no point. And therefore he says, writes the Ramban, that really is what all of life as a Jew is supposed to be about. If you don't have that understanding of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is and why it is that we serve him, then why would you serve him? There's just no point, there's no purpose to this experience of life and to doing anything from the Taryag Mitzvahs. So that really is why, the Ramban explains, this is so fundamental to our understanding. And I think that often people misunderstand what emunah really means. Rav Shimshon Pinkus writes in one of his svarim, he has many very beautiful svarim, but in one of them where he really deals with a lot of issues of emunah, he puts it into very practical terms and he says the following. What does it mean to have emunah? Imagine you have somebody who approaches you and asks you for a loan. They're trying to start a business. They want to get off the ground. They ask you, they want to borrow $150,000. Now, you're not a multimillionaire. $150,000 is a lot of money, but this is your best friend. You're prepared to maybe take out of your savings and try to help this person. So with the right safeguards and whatever it may be, you're willing to lend them $150,000. You write up a contract. You draw up a plan when they're going to pay you back. You give them the money. Another friend of yours happens to notice all of this and comes over to you and says, why did you give $150,000 to this person? You say, well, they're trying to start a business. I didn't give it to him. I just lent it. Well, how do you know they're going to pay you back? What's the answer? I don't know. I'm not positive. Things can happen. But I trust this person because I know them. I have faith. I trust that person because of the long-standing relationship that we have. If an average person would come over to me and ask me for such a gift, for such a loan, I would never give it. I give it here because I have faith in the person that I'm dealing with from all my prior experiences with them. And as a result of that, I'm willing to do something that's a little bit crazy. Yes, I give them the $150,000. So, Rav Shimshon Pinkus contrasts that with something else. Imagine we go outside, we're all looking up into the sky, and I tell you, I trust that the sun is shining. I believe the sun is shining. Imagine I go outside in the middle of the night and I say, I believe it's dark outside and the moon is out. That wouldn't be the right way to express myself. Because that's fact. The sun is shining outside and the moon is shining at night and it's dark. So you wouldn't say, I trust or I believe that the sun is shining or that it's nighttime. You say, I know that it's morning or it's night. You would say, I know that there's a floor beneath us and a ceiling above all of us. You don't say, I trust that, I believe that. So what does it mean when we say, Ani ma'amin? What does it mean? We have a mitzvah, leha'amin ba'akadosh baruch hu. To believe, to trust in the Ribono shel Olam. If it was something that was so factually provable, that wouldn't be belief. That would be as factually provable as the fact that there's a floor beneath me, or the fact that there's a roof above my head. So, I made a mistake when I spoke to the TJJ mothers, and I mentioned this point. You know, some of them were also asking questions of an emunah, and I said, well, we were standing in Yerushalayim, and I said, if I would tell you that there's a stone floor beneath us, I wouldn't have to say, I believe. I would say, there is a stone floor beneath us. She says, well, I'm a scientist, I'm not sure. Maybe it's made of this or that. Okay, not the point. Don't get lost in the details. Somebody lost my point. But the point is, if there's something that's so clear and evident and obvious to all of us, you don't have to say, I believe. You say, I know. Well, therefore, writes of Shimshon Pinkus, when I talk about the mitzvah of emunah, it means I come to a point in my life where I prove this and I prove that and it's so clear to me, but then I get to a point where it's not so clear to me. And what do I do then? When I'm confronted with that moment where it's actually not clear at all, that's where the mitzvah of emunah begins. That's what it means to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when I'm not actually clear about the facts. When I have to take that leap, when I have to move forward and say, I've gotten to a point where I've tried my best to understand it, and at this point, I really don't understand any longer. I really don't have a full understanding, a full appreciation. That is where the mitzvah of emunah begins. That's what it means, leha'amin. That's what it means to believe. To believe in something means it's not actually something that is provable. So yes, you can go to a seminar and they'll prove this and they'll prove that. If you're a thinking person at some point in your life, you're going to confront something and say, this makes no sense. This cannot be. This doesn't fit with my understanding of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. If you look in the Sifrei Machshava, over the many, many millennia of Jewish history, they write, why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world? Why are we all here? So the Ramchal writes that you can boil it down. The Ramchal wrote the Mesilas Yesharim. He says, you can boil it down to one thing. And that is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world lehetiv im habruim. All he wanted to do was to do good with people. Well, you can't do good with people if there are no people in the world. So he had to create people in order that he should be able to do good to them. So really, so you ask yourself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to do good to people. I don't know, I've met more than dozens of people who don't seem to have it good in life. So what do you do with that? How do you confront that reality? You can say, from today till tomorrow, I believe, and it's wonderful, and I'm going to prove it, I'm going to go to the seminar, when you're confronted with a real-life situation where it doesn't match up, or it doesn't add up to our understanding about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do you do then? There's actually a beautiful tshuva in the Radvaz. The Radvaz, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, writes that he was once sent the following question. It was a father who tragically lost his child at a young age. And during the Shiva, he didn't cry at all. He was stoic, not because he was in a state of shock, but because theologically he believed you're not allowed to cry. If we believe Kalmadi Avid Rahmana Litav Avid, if we believe everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is for the good, then why would I cry? What's there to cry about? Obviously, this was something that was supposed to be, and I'm actually quite happy that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this to me. So there were some of his friends who felt very uncomfortable with that. Seems very strange. Not to cry to Shiva. Seems a little strange. So they didn't know what to do with it. They sent the question to their Radbaz. Is it appropriate that when somebody goes through a tragedy like that, that they don't cry? That they evoke no emotion at all? Their Radbaz responded, Ein ze ela mimidas achzarius. That is not a person who has tremendous amount of belief. That's not a mamon. That's a person who has no heart. Somebody who doesn't cry during a tragic shiva like that doesn't mean that you're the strongest believer in God. It means you have no heart. It means you have no understanding. It means you had no relationship with the child in the first place. It means you really don't care enough. That's what it means. Nothing more or less than that. So we're confronted with situations where it is very difficult to make sense of where HaKadosh Baruch Hu fits into the equation. If we have one level of understanding of him and suddenly this doesn't match up, so what do you do then? Writes of Shimshon Pinkus and the other Balei Machshava write the same. That is what Emunah means. Emunah means that a person gets to that moment in life, is confronted with that situation that's painful and difficult and hard to make sense of, and yet they say, I believe. Not because I can prove it, not because I understand it, but because I have faith. That's what faith means. That's where faith begins. At the moment of life where you cannot prove it. And one of the primary reasons why we find this mitzvah of emunah so complicated is because we're dealing with a reality, we're dealing with an entity, we're dealing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was described by the Navi Yeshaya as a kel mistater, as a God who is concealed, as a God who is hidden. There were very lucky and blessed generations where they had a very open relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where they had a perspective, where everything was just so clear to them. Like the Medrash tells us, on the occasion of Kriyas Yamsuf, Masharas HaShivcha Al HaYam, what the simplest maidservant saw on the experience of Kriyas Yamsuf, L'ra Yecheskel Ben Buzi B'Nevuaso, the greatest of the Nevi'im did not have that kind of clear understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your life like that, that's something that most of us don't experience. It's something most of us don't have the blessing to see. So most of us are living with this reality of a kel mistater, of God who is hidden, of God who is not transparent, of one who we don't fully understand, to the point that the Navi Yechezkel writes, there were many members of his generation who said, Ein Hashem ro'o sanu, the same way we don't see God, He also doesn't see us. Azav Hashem es ha'aretz. Obviously, God left this world. How could He be here? He allowed Yerushalayim to be destroyed. He allowed the Jewish people to go into Golus. He allows all this to happen, and you're going to tell me that He's here? Doesn't make sense. Azav Hashem es ha'aretz. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has left the world. And He left us all here to figure it out. There were many people who believed that. I'm sure there are many people who continue to believe that. So you have to ask yourself, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create this in such a strange way? Why did the Ribbono Shel Olam set up a system where He is invisible, where He is unprovable, where we can't really find Him, we can't really locate exactly where He is and where He's not, where we don't fully understand His involvement in every aspect of our lives? Why would He set up such a system? Why would He be a kel mistater? Of what good is that? Of what benefit is that to all of our lives? The Baal HaTanya explains perhaps the reason why is because I'm sure anyone who has a teenager at home will appreciate it. Sometimes, I've heard, teenagers don't appreciate their parents as much as they should. Sometimes. Not in our community, but in other places. There is such a phenomenon, if you can imagine. When do you feel your child, your teenager, really appreciates who you are? When they go to camp in the summer. And they don't have mom there to take care of everything they need. Suddenly they love their mom. How did that happen? How did that happen? Nothing changed. Your love for the child was there in the beginning, and it's there now. The only thing that changed was there was an absence that was created. There was a sense of distance that was created, a sense of longing that now exists. And as a result of that, your child begins to love you. Your child begins to appreciate all the things that were always there for them, but they never bothered to think about. They never bothered to consider. Writes the Baal HaTanya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to set up a system where we will be in our lives on an incessant journey of desire, of longing, of passion, of excitement. If the Ribono Shel Olam was something that was so obvious in all of our lives and so present, every time we woke up, we would just be confronted with it. It would be something that we wouldn't really completely feel. It would be something that we wouldn't be excited about. We wouldn't be passionate and on a quest to find it and to discover it in our lives. I have a brother-in-law who grew up on Rehov Misgav Ladach. You know what that is? That's the block in Yerushalayim overlooking the Har HaBayis, the last block in the Old City. In 1967, after the Israeli army captured the city of Yerushalayim, my brother-in-law's family was lucky enough to be granted one of those apartments. People were terrified to live there. And he grew up there. Out of his bedroom window, he overlooks the Kotel and the Har HaBayis every single day. Not now, but when he was a child. And you think about it. I asked him on a number of occasions, so how often did he actually go daven by the Kotel? You know, there were shuls in the Old City. They all went to daven wherever they went. Of course, that's natural. If this is your backyard, if this is your playground, is the front lobby of the Kotel, of course you're not going to understand what it is. Of course you're not going to appreciate how lucky and how blessed you are to be living where you do. Because this is the reality you're confronted with every single day, every moment of your life. I would venture to say most of us probably, as much as we struggle with Lashon Hara on a day-to-day basis, when we're actually standing, davening at the Kotel, and someone turns to us and makes fun of another person, we're probably going to ignore them. Why? Because this is not the time and place. This is just not appropriate. I don't know. I asked my brother-in-law, did anyone ever speak Lashon Hara at your Shabbos table? Could it be? I mean, every picture they have in their house is overlooking the Old City. How can anyone ever do an Aver in their lives? Obviously, that's not reality. Because that's part of their lives. And the Baal HaTanya writes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to set up a system where we would have this incessant feeling of longing, of pining, of yearning to be connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and what that means for all of us. I read a study a number of years ago about long-distance couples. So we're familiar with Taras HaMishpacha, which is exactly what this is, long-distance couples. So they're back and forth, they were interviewing couples. Husband has to go away and work in a foreign country, and he's away for 3 to 6 months. And what that does to a relationship. So, it does lots of things in both directions. Everybody agreed it's probably not so healthy, but what they come to the conclusion is, putting some distance in your relationship can be helpful. Even if you aren't in a long-distance relationship, we're not talking about flying to another country, living away from the family, we're not talking about that. But having some distance in a relationship is probably healthy. It allows for you to miss one another and to realize why you got each other in your lives in the first place. That's what it is. When we feel that overwhelming sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help in our lives, when we feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us, it reminds us why we're in this relationship in the first place. Well, there are times along the way when it's frustrating. There are times along the way, like we have in every relationship, where it's not exactly what we imagined it to be, where everybody's not doing exactly what they should, where maybe I'm not being spoken to the way I expected. But yet, that's part of a relationship. When you have that moment of intimate closeness, of real love, of real appreciation and understanding, I remind myself, as they say, why I got the other person in my life in the first place. Is that the feeling I have 24/7? No, of course not. It's not natural for a person to feel that. But is that the aspiration of every relationship that I have, including the relationship that I have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Of course. And therefore, says the Baal HaTanya, this was by design. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to be this way. That even though there are going to be individuals in the world who may doubt the presence and the understanding and the existence of the Ribono Shel Olam, There are those who are going to, at the same time, be on a never-ending journey to try to discover and appreciate and understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu means to them in their lives. So I see we only have 2 minutes left. By a show of hands, should we continue next week? Or should I just quickly finish up some loose ends here? Yeah? So we'll continue next week? Okay. So maybe we'll stop here for now. Amir Tashem, we will...